Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
You are listening to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast.
Swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone! It went deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 129. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, Yasiel Puig fits right in with the Indians. Framil Reyes is not quite as good so far. Antonio Brown refuses to play in the NFL because his helmet is weird. Is there something in baseball that could be the equivalent of that? Aaron Civale is special. We kind of dig into why that is. We look at players' weekend, jerseys, and names. And something new, we're going to review the poll that SB Nation asked through their fan poll, so getting the general approval rating of Francona and the direction of the Indians. Kind of neat to see what Indians fans are thinking. Before we get into all that, I want to read a nice review we got on Apple Podcasts, which, by the way, you can review us there anywhere you listen to them. Just leave us a review if you want. And Fulton the other day, he left a review. It said, great stuff. The Not Sack Bunny of podcast, 5 stars, which, quite frankly, is the highest praise anybody can get. If you're the equivalent of Not Sacrifice Bunning, you're the equivalent of the opposite of the worst thing ever, I think is what I'm getting at there. Anyway, joining me for all that and more is none other Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Hey, Matt, I'm good. How are you?
You were going to do the Yasiel Puig thing, man.
I don't remember what it was. Sorry, I got distracted. I started looking at Rays statistics, and then I got I ended up somewhere else.
Oh, we had a good conversation topic before, and then we forgot it.
Oh, but how he's the greatest really player fun. In the history of the Cleveland Indians. Is that what we're going to talk about?
It might be true. It might be.
I think he went 7-for-6 today with 19 home runs. No, he didn't do that well. He had a hell of a series. Like, Jesus Christ. He beat the crap out of the Twins. He just hates the Twins. He should go to the Yankees. He'd really find a home there because they also hate the Twins. So,
do they really hate them, or do they just not even recognize their existence?
You're right. I think it's more of a disdain. They feel as though having to go to Minnesota to play baseball is beneath them. So when they do play them in the playoffs, they try to make it as short a time as possible. So they play them in the division series every time, beat them twice at home, then have to go to Minnesota for one game. And then you're done. So that's pretty good. I mean, it's efficient.
If the Indians lose to the Astros this playoff series again in terrible, awful fashion this year, mm-hmm. Are we quite on the level of the Twins and Yankees yet, or probably not?
No, because the Astros are something more, right?
Like I don't know. I don't think it matters if they're more or not. They keep the Astros whooping are just ass so, like that.
But they whoop everyone's ass like that. I mean, generally, true. You know that. Yes, they really.
Well, some of those Yankees teams.
That's true. That's true. But it seems like even when they're not that good, they end up beating the hell out of the Twins. So I don't know. True. It just feels
it's
like
it's a fun little thing,
you know. In the latter half of last decade, it was just a general woodshedding, basically. Whenever those
poor Twins came to the plate and just got annihilated every single time,
right? You know, kind of like what happened on Saturday night up in Baltimore. Oh God!
All right, Merritt, we talked long enough.
Oh God!
Meatball. It sneaks up on you. I'm telling you.
So
I'm gonna do mine first. I liked the ones I got this week. It doesn't always happen, but this week I got some good ones. My first one. I can't remember who said it on Twitter, but somebody asked like why everybody's talking about June 4th as like the day that they arbitrarily pick stats. It's because basically that's when the Indians were at their lowest, and now they're not quite at their lowest. As we record this, the division is tied. They took 3 of 4 from Minnesota in Minnesota, so that was a really good series. Technically, AL Central leaders, that's all I want. That's all I need. But since June 5th, which is the day after they were at their lowest point when they started to make the comeback, I mean, the Indians are doing it with every single aspect of the game. I don't know if it's too early to call them the most complete team in baseball, but over the last month or so, it's defense, it's pitching, it's bullpen, other than Brad hit a couple of times, it's speed on the bases. And in that time, one thing that really sticks out is just their general plate approach. They're second in team contact percentage in that span, 80%, which is only 0.5 behind the AL leading Astros. Everybody else is quite a bit behind. They're first at swinging in the zone, and they're the fourth lowest at swinging out of the zone. So they're being selective way more than they were earlier in the season. They're making really good contact, and it's resulted in the fifth best WAR, or the fifth best WOBA in the AL in that span at 341. And they're also the least strikeouts in the AL at 19.5%. So, I mean, we're all kind of focused on like how good and surprising these pitchers are. We're going to talk about it more, but it's also worth noting that the offense just on its own has been, I don't know what's changed. Does Tyvan Berkleyov exist now? I don't know what it is, but their approach to the plate has gotten so much better over this little span. I'd assume part of that is just Jose Ramirez coming back to life. And I guess even recently it's Yasiel Puig helping out. And I don't know. It's just really fun to watch that this team in the last couple months.
No, it's quite impressive the run they've been on. I mean, I know we've said it before and we'll probably say it again. We're used to this at this point. You know, the calendar flips to June or July and then the Indians just go on an insane run of some kind. I know a couple weeks back, you know, people were posting about how this was, you know, we were approaching like the best record at a certain point by the Indians in a long, long time. And you know, the way we'd been looking at the season, it was a total mess, basically. And we're like, this is terrible. But really what they were doing was just performing way better than they have in 2016, 2017, 2018, all seasons where they were, again, a very good team and then just mashed the gas and, you know, won 14 straight or 22 straight or what have you. And it really helped out. But
yeah, yeah. All right, Barrett, what's your first meatball?
On Sunday, Greg Allen went 2-for-5, hit a home run. On Saturday, the 10th, yes, Greg Allen went 1-for-3 with a double and a walk. On Friday, he went 2-for-4, scored a run. Before that, on August 7th, in Game 2, he went 2-for-3. This is all a long way of saying Greg Allen, I think, is way better than anyone, really, I think, gives him credit for. So much so, in fact, that, Matt, I discovered the strangest thing in his batting splits. And let me read some things off to you. These are all by the month WRC pluses that he's posted. March and April, negative 21.
Not great. Could be better.
May, 117. June, 113. July, 125. August, 138. It's so, but what's also weird about that is in the first half overall, he posted a 69 WRC plus, in the second half, 95. It's one of those things where just the collection of numbers in small segments don't add up in the larger segment. You know what I mean? Because it's just, I don't know. I just thought it was a very weird, quirky little thing where in most of the months he's played. Now, and granted, we're talking about some months where he's played, you know, he had 2 games in June. He had 17 in July. He had 6 in May. March and April is the biggest one. That's before July where he had 42 plate appearances, which is, again, his second most in any single month. And he was very terrible. But it's just, he's been so good. And this is all a long roundabout way of saying, I think he should play every day. I think he may be the second best outfielder on the team at this point. And
where do you put him every day? Just in place of Nickman?
Well, I guess, yeah, right? I guess so. I think that has to be the answer. I know we've all enjoyed Tyler Nickman's kind of streak here lately, but we all know that's not real, right? Like we've all been around Tyler Naquin for quite a while now, right? We know that it was,
he's
all
a streaky hitter. Yeah, there's no, you can't deny that it's right, gonna go, yeah, away eventually.
I mean,
yeah,
even, you know, you look in the last 14 days and his OPS is 375, so things are cooling off for him a little bit.
Yeah, and especially if Luplo's injured, you'd get Greg Allen there every day instead of having to platoon him is a big deal,
right? Exactly. And which is not to say that, you know, I mean, Allen isn't a great hitter from both sides, but he's a switch hitter, and he's at least, I mean, it works, I guess. It's, the sample sizes are so small that it's hard to say anything about it. It's a 97 WRC plus from batting left and 25 batting right, but again, we're talking about plate appearances totaling, 30 and 109, not in that order, 109 against righties and 32 against lefties.
I think, I mean, intentional or not, you kind of pointed out some of the problems with like chopping up stats.
Is, yes,
that you can look at these things, sure, and they turn out however you can chop up whatever you want, however you want to look. But Greg Allen's happened to lay nicely in months where he's been super hot between certain months. So it's,
well, but, and that's the thing though. Every single month he has been a positive hitter, except for April and March and April.
All right. So my next one, or last one, is just sort of like a general stat thing again. It's WPA, win probability added. Quite frankly, I don't think it gets enough love for what it is. Like, we always focus on people who talk about stats is always about finding the ones that you can use to project and sort of try to look into the future. But not every stat has to be that. You can do better than RBIs as far as looking at like the story of a game and what happens. But that's like what WPA is really good at. You can look if for people who don't know, it's what it is. Like most stats, you're trying to strip out as much context as possible. You want to see like this player did this, and you want to know how well he can do it in any situation. But WPA is the exact opposite. It's telling you what players did in the context of the moment. And Michael Bowe tweeted out a list of the Indians leaders in WPA, which I thought was really neat to see. So it's not, you're never going to look at it and say like this player is being, has a high WPA, so he's going to be good going forward. It's just a way to like take a snapshot of how the seasons look. Like, so Brad Hand had a ridiculous minus 0.402 win probability added when he gave up a double, which, so Marwin Gonzalez's double in the ninth was plus 267, 0.267. Because there were men on first and second with one out. So that was a huge hit. It was the bottom of the ninth.
Does that mean a quarter of a win? Like 0.267? Is that 0.267% of a win?
I don't think it's percent.
It's something.
Well, yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, sort of.
Parts of a win? Not percent. But you know I guess what I mean? It would, yeah. Tenths of a win or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Like you're adding that much.
Okay.
Because I don't think Brad. I guess that makes sense too, because Brad took away half their chance to win. But, but even like Carlos Santana was only a positive 0.150, and that's because of basically the context of when it was. It was in the top of the inning. It was a grand slam, which was more than Marwin Gonzalez got. It gave the Indians a huge lead, but it wasn't the bottom of the inning. So they weren't, it didn't increase their win expectancy quite as much as giving the team another shot. So it's just kind of a neat way to look at that thing. And I think not enough people look at WPA just as. Or they just shrug it off as nothing. And also Baseball Savant is kind of cool. They have it. You can see in their scorecards now. Yeah, you can see those individual ones. And I just think in general, when we're talking about stats, we need to get back to, I mean, I like the advanced stats, of course, and I like using those things in more deeper writing and looking into things. But it's also fun just to look at like, hey, this guy was helped out his team this much in this very specific context situation. Doesn't make it a bad stat. And it's also why I think RBI are useless, but as far as most things, but you can sort of look and see like this guy has hit this well when players have been in scoring position and he's done this, he's hit a lot of runs. And so there's just a lot of ways we can use more stats than just the ones that are like WRC plus, which you use a lot at war and all this stuff that are fun. But like these storytelling stats, I want to get more love than they get.
All right, folks, you heard it here first. The editor of Let's Go Tribe has laid down a mandate. More WPA.
More ribbies.
And more photos of that damn Spider-Man. I don't really have anything to add to that. That's a very interesting, and it is fun. I love those little graphs, especially right. You look at the little graph from today's game, for Sunday's game, because it's like, ooh, we're all real high.
It's wacky,
It's just like, uh-oh, it's Black Tuesday, 1929. Uh-oh, here we go. And then it just bounces right back up. It is very interesting to see. It's I hate those graphs sometimes because I know how probability works, man. I know how it works. But I look at it at the same time, I go, no, they've lost the game. It's as good as over. I know it's happening. I know it's not likely that I win the lottery, but I still buy a ticket.
All right, man. What's your next one? Or last one?
So, Miguel Sano is pretty good, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right. He got one hit this series. One. Loser. That's pretty impressive, right? He only put the ball into play six times in the entire series. That's the entirety of my meatball. I found that today. I was like, oh,
just wanted
shit.
To shit on Miguel Sano.
I mean, the thing is, all right, so he put the ball into play three times. Three of those were over 94 miles an hour, and two of them were over 100 miles an hour. So he's still pissed on the ball when he did make contact. But I just think it's amazing that they were able to just throttle him up so much. I mean, Miguel Sano is great. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's just a big moose of a man who is flawed in his own special way and is, I don't know. I like him a lot. It's just he has to be on the team that is who they are. And he also hits the ball very hard.
Yeah, I think you can also just say the Indians have good pitchers, like full stop. It's been really fun watching Twins fans panic because they're seeing how good the Indians pitchers are compared to theirs. And it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
It is a stark difference, by the way. It really is.
It is.
Just wow. Even Adam Plutko just just stand up firm against what is supposed to be just an absolute absurd offense. An offense that, where do they rank in absolutely everything? Like, they're top three in most things. They're what? They're first in home runs. They're second in, or fourth in batting average, fourth in on base, first in slugging. I mean, as a team, they're hitting 271, 337, 500, which would be the third best hitter on the Indians right now. If you don't count Yasiel Puig because he's new, and then the Indians just bottled him right up. I think obviously the injury to Nelson Cruz didn't help very much at all, but them able to just stop Miguel Sano from having any impact really at all.
Who was that new guy? I mean, he's not new, but Luis, how do you say his name? Arias? I don't,
yes.
He's going to be a pain in the ass for so many years.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to that. I don't think I'm that worried about Miguel Sano. He seems like a guy you can beat pretty effectively, but this guy seems really good.
I mean, he's still their best, you know, if you go by many metrics, he's still their best hitter outside of Nelson Cruz right now. Not by a huge amount, and Mitch Garver actually is probably better, but yeah, Luis Arraez is going to be a problem for the Indians for an extended period of time. I don't know if I'm worried it'll be more of like a Joe Mauer type of constantly getting those goddamn ground ball singles.
No, that's Max Kepler. That's who's the annoying new Joe Mauer.
Max Kepler has 32 home runs. Stop that comparison.
Joe Mauer with power. There he is. He finally showed up. Not Matt Wieters. It's Max Kepler.
It took a while, but there he is. Yeah. I don't know. Honestly, I think that them having Marwin Gonzalez fills out that frustrating singles and frustrating base hit role, because he's not even very good. But it's just always, I swear, him in my eyes is a 400 hitter.
It's that Royals slappy bullshit that they do, and it's obnoxious. Hey, man, that was
Meatball.
We got to cancel this section.
So our first, it's not really a news story we'll do first, but I just want to talk about Yasiel Puig. This man's really fun. On Sunday, he hit his first home run as an Indian, 107 miles per hour, not even his hardest hit as an Indian.
He really bumped that one.
Went 455 feet, the second longest Indians home run of the season behind Bobby Bradley. He's on all kinds of fun stuff. He finger wagged when he hit a double. He waved to the batter after they threw away.
That was the best thing he's ever done.
they tried to throw the ball to first, and then he slid it to third and then kissed it, or blew a kiss to his teammates in the dugout. I think my favorite thing actually is, for no reason, before a pitch, Yasiel Puig is just standing there ready for the pitch, swings his bat around like a lightsaber. There's no context, no reason to do it, but he just swings it around in a circle, and it's the greatest thing ever.
We'd all do that. We would all do the exact same thing, wouldn't we? We've all done that, haven't we?
Anything you get like that's weighted like that, you're going to do it. You're going to swing it.
Oh, yeah, you got to make a noise with it, maybe. Yeah, no, it's a...
And the Indians tweeted, it was just like one of those no one colon blank, and then Yasiel Puig colon spin the bat there. That was perfect, yeah. But yeah, Yasiel freaking Puig, man. He says he's not even locked in yet. He said he's still just focused on the essentials or something like that, that he's going to get better, apparently. I mean, if this is how he plays now, sign this man forever.
Yeah, he's got a 1,000 OPS with the Indians so far. So get better, baby. Let's keep on cooking.
Now, do you think, is there any chance the Indians sign him? That's the thing that's growing.
I've been thinking about that for a while.
Let me get out the context of it. Just no.
I mean, I want it so badly, dude.
I think
every single fan's like, maybe. Just, you know, I mean,
you're absolutely punting on Lindor at that point, right? Like, there's no way you'd get both.
Well, he'd be 29. I don't know.
4 or 5 years, maybe? Three?
I was thinking, yeah, like a 3-year deal for $20 million?
I mean, depending how he plays going on the stretch, though, into the playoffs, he's going to get a ton of money.
Oh, without a doubt. That's the thing. I mean, he's going to get... You'll be made rich by somebody, whether a bonehead or a smart team. Who knows? I don't know. He'll reveal something. But yeah, no, I really want him. But I did just finish saying all that stuff about Greg Allen. having Yasiel Puig on the team really gets in the way of the Greg Allen idea I had earlier.
Yasiel Puig is getting in the way of Greg Allen. You heard it here. It's
Listen, Greg Allen is inexpensive and he's good. And shut up. It's my third point.
Yeah, I want Yasiel Puig. And the big thing I noticed, like, I know there's a lot of pointless bad criticism about Yasiel Puig, but he does in the past in the Dodgers, he kind of didn't run out some balls, whatever, he didn't do it. But it seems like every single hit, he's sprinting down the line. And I feel like it's got him more than one hit. It's just how hard he runs on every little time he makes contact.
I mean, this must be contract year Puig, and I love it. Let's keep it going, yeah, you know?
He's doing the one-year contract thing and just keep going and jacking up how good he is. So, and then the other part of this conversation is, of course, Franmil Reyes looks terrible, but he'll be better.
Yeah, well, yeah, right? Whatever. He'll figure it out.
Really? I did love
when he was not in the lineup the night after getting his
congrats. Go sit down. You got a double
that was going to let him relax and really play the game the way he wanted. Yeah, I'll bench him. Oh, all right.
Now they can sit and stew on the rest of his failures. That'll be good. I don't know the thought process behind that at all.
Maybe he was tired. I don't know. Maybe it was a scheduled day off anyway. Like, that's the only thing I could think. But what the hell? Just play him. Shit. That was my entire thought process behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. There was and between those two, like, I know the rule is good that you shouldn't blow up a catcher, but how much would you pay to watch Yasiel Puig just destroy somebody?
Obviously, we all want to see these things, Matt. That's why we stop and watch car accidents or compilations of trains crashing on the internet.
I feel like Reyes would run him over, but Puig would probably get him in the air. Like, he would.
There would be some elevation. There would be, yeah, no.
I mean,
to be clear again, we don't want any of this.
We don't want any violence. No, we don't want any injuries. We don't want to see it. We just want to see it.
You wonder, you know, the morbid, quiet thoughts, you know, like when you're driving down the road, you think to yourself, what if I did drive off this embankment?
Now, would Puig absolutely blow somebody up and then finger wag at him as he's walking away? That's what I want to know. I think he might.
Just give him the old Mutombo. No, not today. Jesus, that'd be cold hearted. I'd love that.
All right.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So, this next one should be near and dear to your heart, Merritt, as a weird...
Matt, Raiders I have a new fan? Idea. I've decided I hate Aaron Civale. Anyway, go on to what you were going to say.
So, Antonio Brown...
never mind. We're not doing that part yet. Never mind.
We'll get there. Hold on. The near and dear one to your heart is your weird Oakland Raiders fandom and Antonio Brown.
They're like winners and not the Browns.
Who refuse? I get. Well, we're gonna get so many more bad reviews, Merritt.
I know.
I don't like that Merritt guy.
I just lost the entirety of our listener base. That's it. Gone.
Antonio Brown. The of course the NFL tested all these new helmets. They have new ones you have to wear, and Brown's is not one of the new ones. So he refuses to play and. Go to training camp and I guess preseason now. So I kind of thought, like, what is just because it's a big story and we can kind of drift it over into baseball. Is there equivalent you could think of in baseball that would get to this point? I feel like baseball is pretty good about because there's no weird face mask thing. I guess if somebody really didn't want to wear the ear flaps, but are those even mandatory? I don't remember.
Not really. No. This brought to mind a thing that happened an indeterminate amount of time ago. This is such a vague memory that I have, but. One time, at some point, it's got to be since 2009, obviously, but when Joe Girardi was the manager of the manager of the Yankees, he stopped the game because some player on the Rays had a bat that, you know, normally the baseball bat has like the curved top, you know, and it's kind of beveled in the middle there. You know what I'm talking about?
I do, yeah. They just didn't have that divot in there?
It was cut. It was flat. The bat just went up and then stopped. It was a flat thing. And he stopped the game and made them like investigate the bat. And it was perfectly legal. But it was just this weird, I don't know. That's what came to mind. And I think that is what would be a big sticking point. The issue being, of course, you wouldn't be able to have the star power of Antonio Brown behind, I guess what it would be like if Shohei Ohtani loved a certain bat, right? Yeah. And, we've seen this already. What am I talking about? Glove. Remember when Mike Clevenger couldn't use that glove anymore?
Yeah.
What was that last year, I think, I guess, right?
It was colored weird or something. They said it messed with the batters. Yeah,
That would be it, I suppose. If it was his glove that was, you know, he's been using since forever or whatever. But the other idea would be a bat. Like, say, Shohei Ohtani had been using the same bat in the NPB, you know, for his entire career. But it turns out that it's too narrow or... not heavy enough or what have you by whatever amount. He's like, I'll burn it down. I'm using this bat only. So
yeah, I guess if like they determine that somehow X bats are dangerous, like if they increase something they're not supposed to,
because that's what a lot of people bats. Use. That's right. Yeah. That's a big
like if
thing,
they ban man. Those for some reason, that's something that a lot of people are going to, I don't know why they would, but that's maybe like the equivalent I can think of.
Yeah. Maybe the bottom of it doesn't protect the hand enough or something. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's causing too many bats to fly into the.
Yeah, if it causes you to lose grip more, that'd be a real thing. If they,
there you go. That's something.
I imagine it doesn't happen enough. Yeah.
Or if they banned
the oven mitt for when you're running.
Oh, that's a perfect one.
All of the Indians would just riot.
Half of baseball would be furious.
Now, did Rajai Davis start that, or was it close to the beginning? Because I don't remember that before.
I think he
started on the Indians at least, right?
Yeah, definitely on the Indians. It was a thing I'd started to see probably that year. I think probably 2016 was the first time that it started really leaking into baseball. But like, if I can,
you
could
determine
that,
that's cheating almost, because you're not afraid to put a body part out there that you would be otherwise,
and you're extending the size of your hand. Like, right. if it's true,
how big can you make that thing? Can you have the Arby's mitt?
Exactly. You know, I mean, look at hockey. That was a whole thing. You know, with the pads, like they were getting the goalie pads were getting absurdly sized. You could be basically just a fat man and fill the whole goal.
Holy shit, Merrick! What can they? This is a thing. Is anybody listening? If you don't work for the Indians, turn this off right now. If you work for the Indians, get really long mitts, like really.
They're just like 3 feet long. They're just.
Just get like, so you look like Voldo from Soul Calibur. You just got two of them, and you run to the base and you dive around them.
Oh boy, the Indians' stolen base rates have really gone up. Damn.
No, there's got to be a rule, right? You can't have such.
There must be something. There's got to be something, because otherwise they would just wear their baseball glove. But
what if nobody everyone thought just, about that?
Ever just wearing an outfit like. You know what? Sometimes, man, it takes an outsider to change the way people look at things. So
we're going
to
be the new Moneyball. We'll just call it Big Glove. Money Glove.
The other thing I was thinking, and this was half a shot at the Astros, but what if a combination, they banned a combination of rosin and spray on, what do you call that stuff? Sunscreen. There you go.
What if they banned the stuff that's already supposed to be banned, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. What if they actively banned that stuff?
The Astros would be screwed, in other words.
Well, because what else could be banned? There's bats, there's gloves, there's...
I guess they could change something about your cleats, I guess, but I don't think they'd
how
do that.
I mean, obviously, rocket cleats is the obvious answer, but... something about the pitcher's glove. We already mentioned the thing with...
the color Clevenger, of the glove.
I suppose. Maybe size of...
Mandated all gloves are the same size? They want to be really weird about it?
Well, because I know that like infielder gloves are smaller than outfielder gloves, but what if an infielder started wearing an outfielder glove and just for range reasons? Would that be helpful? Probably not, huh?
Just some weirdos trying it anyway? Yeah, I don't know.
He's got this huge 5-foot-long glove.
Here, we're at this again, Merritt. How big of a glove can you have?
How big?
Can
what is the rule behind glove? Well, I don't know, even. I'm Googling that right now. Glove size,
big? Question mark?
Rules. MLB glove size rules. It's a question everyone's asking. It's a okay, there are rules. Okay.
Oh, damn it.
Damn. Yeah, a catcher may wear a mitt no more than 30 inches in circumference. Shit. Or 18 and a half inches from top to bottom.
That's probably the same for the oven mitt then, too.
Every player to the catcher and the first baseman are restricted to the use of a glove that is no more than 13 inches long or 7.7 or 7.75 inches wide. Interesting. So how can that or fall into this?
You just have a long-ass glove, I guess? We got to find a loophole.
No, it's fine. It's 7.5. It says or, so it can be 900 feet long. It's fine.
Now, hear me out, Merritt. Can you have two gloves if you wanted to?
What if you want to cover... MLB.
What if you really wanted to be all over the place and covering everything with two 9-foot gloves? Question mark?
Question mark? It's rare to see a pro player wear two golf gloves. And so, okay, this
nope,
is golf.
That's golf. Okay.
Wearing golf gloves with hands might be the get in the hole. Could it feel with gloves on? Here we go. Finally, good questions. Each fielder other than the catcher may wear a glove. It says glove, not gloves.
Oh, however, right. May wear a glove, Merritt. Can you not
however,
wear a glove? Can you just be padded and knock them all down?
Says on his shoe, when it was obvious that it meant shoe or shoes. So, Matt, if you got a good enough lawyer, yes.
There we go. This is the podcast declaring we will represent you in a court of law over your
yes.
Gloves.
My brother's a lawyer. It's tax law, but still, it's fine.
Same thing. So something else actually probably close to your heart is someone named Aaron Savali. I'm going to let you take it away because this is about something that you wrote basically. But I want also to put it out there before the podcast that you also said Aaron Savali is going to be better than Shane Bieber. Okay, go ahead, Merritt.
Wait, what? Oh, no, I've been put on blast. Oh, God. Well, first of all, his ERA is lower. So checkmate, Shane.
There we go. Take that, Bieber. Nerds. No, but he's super impressive so far. And he's got the spin rate going. You wrote about this. And then they sort of mentioned that there was – I'm not saying the Indians read your article and then made a decision based off of it, but I'm not saying that. Because before the game, they said they're telling him to throw more high fastball. And if you have a high spin rate, you throw more fastballs. You wrote about spin rate.
Well, the point of throwing... Okay, so those who didn't read my article, obviously. The high spin rate fastball it drops less than a normal fastball, but your brain can't tell that. If you ever watch the documentary Fastball, and I recommend it for everyone, I thought it was truly fantastic. They talk about this, and that's why Justin Verlander throws a high fastball so much, because the human brain expects the ball to move in a certain way, but when it doesn't, you miss it by just a little bit. That's why Savali, I think, gets so many. He got a lot of weak fly balls today against the against a very good high fastball hitting team in the Twins. So it's a value thing to him, I suppose. And spin rate by itself is nothing, basically. Is really, like, there was a great article on Fangraphs that I mentioned in the article last week about Aaron Sanchez and why the Astros wanted him so badly. Was he has not just a good spin, a lot of spin rate. He has a lot of useful spin, I guess. I don't know. I mean, according to the same stats that that Baseball Savant has, that I put Savali against it, he doesn't have as much quote unquote useful spin rate for his fastball or his cutter. But then I looked at the same thing, and neither did Corey Kluber, and neither did Trevor Bauer, and I think they both have good cutters. So I don't know if it's just a sample size thing yet or whatever, but suffice to say, like you mentioned, they did want him to throw more high fastballs, and it works even without the velocity. It's very neat, and the reason I was saying I think he could be better than Shane Bieber is I think he has the raw material to be something better. He had better control than Shane Bieber in the minors, and he, like I said, the raw material is there for stuff to be much more nasty. I'd like a little more velocity out of him, but as we've seen from Mike Clevenger, that is possible to gain. And I'd like to see more of a breaking ball than just him throwing. I mean, if you look at his pitch chart from Sunday, he threw basically a million cutters or sinkers only. And it's just, it's a hilarious combo, because it's like the ball is going to go left or right or left or right or left or right. What am I going to do? Oh, change up. Gotcha, bitch. And then that's how he did this past Sunday.
Yeah. And I do agree that he has the potential for nastier stuff than Bieber, but like Bieber in his last start, man, his stuff was moving more than I've ever seen.
He's incredible now. He is actualizing. And that's the fact there, you know. It's, we're talking about a guy who, yes, they were drafted at the same time. They're basically the same. I think Shane Bieber's actually younger by a couple of days. Shane Bieber is 24 and 72 days. Aaron Savali is 24 and 60 days. So he's actually just a bit younger, but Bieber's also had the benefit of being up in the majors and understanding what does and does not work and growing within the franchise a little bit.
Yeah, and Savali will get there relatively soon, I assume. So
one would hope, at least. Yeah.
God, just think of it. It's going to be Savali, Bieber, and Clevenger for so long. And
that's what I was talking with someone today, just about window for the Indians, you know, and just like what that looks like and how it's going to close soon and stuff. And obviously the Lindor thing looms large, and Kluber is going to be gone soonish, probably. And they got rid of Bauer, obviously, but maybe not, man. Maybe they figure something out with this pitching thing, or at least in the near term. And if Clevenger maintains what he is, and obviously Bieber, it looks great. And I have a lot of hope in Savali, obviously. If this turns into something, then we have guys who could continue to be great. How much of, you know, Bieber being great now, it has to do with him being around Trevor Bauer. Now that he's gone, will that help? Will it bleed over at all? I don't know. We don't know as much about the operations of the, you know, the front office and the mechanics behind the scenes type of guys of the Indians that we do with, say, the Astros, because no one wrote a book about them. But it seems like they do something good with pitchers, and Savali having these raw materials and the great control, I think there's something to be said about him turning into something resembling a top three starter for a playoff.
I like what you said, that the mind thinks it's going to drop more. Can you train yourself out of that, I wonder? Like, is there just David?
So I was Saris. I follow him. He was on Twitter talking. He was talking to someone on the Reds. I'm assuming it was probably Joey Votto or someone. But if you're facing, the way this guy put it was, if you're facing a high spin rate fastball guy, typically you want to aim for, you know, the middle of the ball or maybe just barely below it. The goal should be to try and hit the top of the ball, I believe. Let's see, because then it won't drop.
Sense, yeah.
Like, aim for the top of the ball, because then you'll square up, basically. Which is an insane thing to do, because the ball is moving 96 miles an hour and spinning at 2,600 RPM or whatever.
And you're aiming at, like, what is that, an inch maybe higher or lower, and that
right,
works?
Exactly. Like that's, you know, you remember, you think about these baseball players, they they have like 2010 vision or whatever it is. Like they're superhuman, and being able to just make that small huge adjustment in such a minute space basically is incredible, truly incredible to me.
Hey, Merrick, close your eyes. I want these next words to wash over you for a minute. I want them to be in your soul, and then we will discuss.
Meatballs.
Plaw dog. That is Kevin Pilecki's player weekend name.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's the best. It makes no sense. It's isn't there a lot? What is, I don't know, Plaw dog. It's just good. Earlier this week, the Indians revealed, along with everybody else, their players' nicknames, their players' weekend nicknames, and these really stupid monochromatic jerseys. It's either your black or white jerseys, that's it. They said the point was to so players' custom equipment could stand out more, but I guess it's dumb. I like the ones that were bright and fun, but so we got some good names out of it. We got Plaw Dog, which it sounds dirty to say, but it's good. Yeah, of course, like Franmil Reyes is Lamole. Carlos Santana is Slam Tana.
Are you sure it's not Lamole? Lamole,
yeah, I know. I was like, don't screw this up. Oh, you screwed it up. It's Lamole. Hunter Wood is Woody.
Great. Love it.
Where's another good one? Francisco Lindor is smiley face emoji, Mr. Smiley. Smiley face emoji.
Okay, we all know what the best one is, right? And the best one is obviously
Sim Dog Millionaire.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Brad Hand. What's Brad Hand?
It says it's bro, and then the little, like, I'm assuming the little hang loose emoji. But I was hoping it would be just the hang loose emoji, because that would be the best thing. I still like his the most, though. It's just so stupid. And I'm like, bro, all right. I mean, I have projected a lot of weird things onto Brad Hand, namely the dead-eyed soullessness of a shark. But him being this bro-ass dude is the most hilarious thing about it all, too.
There's also Tyler Naquin is Billy. He should have been Snarf, but I don't know what Billy is.
It doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't know.
It's ridiculous. I don't know. And then
who was Billy? Who was Billy Madison? I don't know.
He just, I don't know. Is it like a Billy Bob thing? Because he hunts a lot and he seems like a real country guy. I don't know what he's going for. Shane Bieber is not Justin, obviously. Oh, yeah. It's all he posts on Instagram.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A man who I know nothing about him, and that's you're projecting
onto him. Yeah, Mike Freeman is Waldo, which is amazing because he just blends in because he's generic.
Yeah, that's very good. Who's that guy? You just lose him. Okay, what does this mean? See, some of like the Spanish ones, like, what do you mean by that? El Paisa.
I still wish that, was it a couple years ago or last year that Rich Hill wanted to be Dick Mountain, but they wouldn't let him do it.
That's no fun. Perfect. That's exactly what he is. It's his name, for God's sake.
Zach Plesak is Sack. I don't know if...
Oh, cool. Oliver Perez is Money.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. So, you know, obviously, Yasiel Puig is Wild Horse.
Right.
Which is great. I was listening to the game on the radio the other day, and Hamilton had been calling him Wild Stallion. And I was just like, Wild Stallions! I don't know if he had just seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or something like that, but it was the best. And so from now on, he's just been Wild Stallion in my head. I'm like, yeah, baby.
Was he messing it up, or he's just giving him his own twist?
He was messing it up 150%. Yes,
the crazy animal is what they call him.
The wacky quadruped. There he goes.
The big old centaur. Jason Kipnis is Dirtbag. That's a good one. I like that.
I've never liked Dirtbag, and I never will. Yeah. Also, Oscar Mercado not being Oxcart is...
That's a damn shame.
Which is my personal nickname. All right, so the two I'm sad aren't happening because the things I call them in my head are Oxcart, and then obviously Carlos Santana being Black Magic Woman because of the Carlos Santana song.
What? Oh. You should just have like some Carlos Santana song. That'd be so good. Or not the musician, like how Shane Bieber is not Justin. That'd be pretty good.
Or, I mean, Smooth. They can't take Smooth, I suppose. At best, Carlos Santana songs. I mean
Black Magic Woman is pretty good.
If his nickname was Everybody's Everything, it would be the most obvious name, because he really is every Indians fan's everything. He is perfectly. You Know That I Love You, Smooth, Maria Maria, The Game of Love, Corazon Espinada, that's a pretty good one. Yeah, that one actually. But Gypsy Queen, that doesn't even make any sense. Anyway, I've been calling him Black Magic Woman in my head for 5 years now, and I just wish it would show up on a jersey one day.
All right, let's finish up. I don't know if we'll make this a whole segment or not. I kind of want to leave it up to you and anybody who manages to listen this far. I think this thing is cool. It's a poll thing that SB Nation does. They call it Fan Pulse. It was just like the NFL blog last year, and I was like, I want those. But then they did them for everybody now, so baseball has them too. It's just kind of like they send out early in the week, and you can vote on different questions. There's always like confidence in your team and manager approval rating, and then sometimes there's other ones thrown in. Like recently it was, how did your team do at the deadline? Or are you happy with how they did at the deadline? So it's just stuff like that that shows up. I think it's kind of neat that seeing these. Who knows what this is actually worth? Probably nothing. The sample size is probably small, especially for some blogs. But for the Indians, it's kind of neat. You see their confidence rising. And this week especially was fun to see because, of course, it happened right after the deadline. So teams like the Indians, they're still pretty confident for the Fan Pulse poll. It was, let me see where it is. Last week, it was 82%. And then this week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, it was 82%. Last week, it was 91%. Because obviously, it was a big bump because, good Lord, they made a good trade. And then, so what SB Nation does is they send us everybody's numbers, basically. They just send on a big doc, and they just say, do a post for it if you want to. So I get to see everybody's. So the Boston Red Sox, theirs was up to 70% a couple weeks ago, down to 4% after the trade deadline. So their fans are thrilled they did nothing and continue to lose. Oh, the Pittsburgh Pirates, they were at 22% a couple weeks ago. They've been 0% for the past couple weeks.
Wait a minute. The Mets were at 3%?
Yeah.
I love this.
It's really good. I love getting this every week.
The Mets one is the best one possible.
Yeah, they skyrocket.
65, 60, 38, 40, 39, 41, 21, 25, 10, 35, 10, 14, 16.
And they started like 97, 93, and then...
Dude, 3-6-4-7-7-17-33. They're still like, fuck this team. Oh, that's great.
It is. It's fun to see this stuff. I mean, like, it sounds by the sounds of it, like, in our Slack channel stuff, like, other blogs, like, their readers hate it or whatever, but I think it's kind of neat. So if people like, first of all, you can do it if you want. You can sign up. We have the post. You can do it. And then you get to vote on it, and then I always post about it later in the week. And you can do it if you want. We can talk about it here. And they kind of had a dumb question for their general MLB one, which is which team looks the strongest following the trade deadline? And the Astros won. It was 82%. Everybody else was just like 6 yeah. and 2%, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
Everyone's like, what are you, stupid? You know, this is interesting about this is obviously, you know, the sample sizes are this or that.
Right.
But people who read SB Nation blogs are, by their nature, probably big fans, right? Like they're going yeah. and seeking out specific news about specific teams and stuff like that. This is, if nothing else, a neat way to gauge how these, you know, somewhat hardcore fans believe in rebuilds. When you look at just the bad teams, just yeah, for instance, you know, Toronto Blue Jays, 93% versus the Kansas City Royals, 49% versus the Orioles, who it cannot be stated enough. They lost 23-2 the other night. 94%. That team is the worst team I've ever seen play baseball. I've seen a lot of shitty baseball in my time. I was watching the simultaneous rebuilds of the White Sox and the Orioles. Oh my god! In person, so many goddamn wasted hours at the parks. And the Orioles are so bad, dude. My god! And they've been below 90% once all year.
Well, you're looking at the manager one, I think.
The manager approval. Okay, now we go over to the confidence. Here we
go. It's still the same story. They're still way up. They were 89 last
week. This doesn't make any sense. I've been to a bunch of Orioles AA games now. There's nothing going on with the Bay Sox. They seem fine, I guess. I mean, the Detroit Tigers are 37%. Jesus Christ.
The Rockies. Look at the Rockies. Like, go from the beginning and just slowly go over.
They've just...
100%. The skids. 100%.
Oh, the skids. Oh, my God.
96%. 75. They wavered a little. 77. Uh-oh. 55. 60. Oh, 89. Doing good. 51.
This is really neat to watch how... You yeah. can judge how different teams are selling their rebuild. Blue Jays are analogous to this one. Yeah, 64%. Excuse me. Okay. Marlins at 91%. Interesting. They're doing a good job of selling the rebuild, I guess. So that's interesting stuff.
And part of this too, I think also, because it goes back to the and blog itself. It's how yeah. team how, the blog or how these blogs cover it. Right. Like the Marlins True. Guy, we've had him on the podcast. He's a super yeah. positive guy and all his writing is pretty positive about the Marlins. He's a really, he likes the Marlins and he writes about them. He's usually happy about them. So I'd assume that's part of it. And I know, like, the Rockies guys, they're sarcastic a lot of the time. It's part of what makes...
The Mets one is nice because it tells you the story of what being a Mets fan is like.
Wow. It just scrapes the bottom and then shoots back up at the end.
Irrational hope and crushing despair. Nothing in between, baby. I love it.
And that's one that probably, like, the Mets, Amazing Avenue was a really big SB Nation blog. So you're probably getting quite a few Mets fans there who are all over the place.
And honestly, if you're a Mets fan, you're not a half-ass in any way at all. You are in, man. You are in 100%.
I want to know who the Astros fans are in the middle of the season. We're like, you know what? I'm not very confident right now. It was down to like 98%.
I don't know, man. Yordan Alvarez struck out last night, so I don't know. This is looking a little bit spotty. Maybe that's when they had three injuries, and suddenly they weren't just world-beating. They were merely a top-five team in baseball. It's like, oh, no. Altuve and Correa are both hurt, and now we're not beating teams by six. We're beating them by four. Oh, God.
Yeah, this is something we can do every week if you want. It's fun. Like you're discovering now. I love getting this every week. Like, there's people that complain about it. I don't get it because it's neat to see. So, yeah, that'll do it. That's our show this week. Mayor, anything coming up this week? It's a good one. There was a lot to talk about. There was a lot of games. It's weird we're not going to be watching the Twins now. That was a really good series. I don't think we mentioned that at all, that it was such a good series to watch.
But it was a great series of baseball. Saturday was the worst possible game, and it's the one I watched the least of. It was the most frustrating piece of baseball I've ever seen.
It was awful.
How many times do they have someone on second or third with one out or no outs?
And it was, I think, anything? For the sixth inning, every single... Did they get the leadoff batter every single inning, or they had somebody on base they stranded every single inning? So.
And they got on with a double or got on first and stole second or something. It's just, Jesus. I hate that, but at the same time, like, hey, you know what? I mean, damn, they were really just banging on doors there. So, yeah, that's no, I have nothing going on in my life. My life's a pointless Maybe slog. 20 people left on base they had on...
Oh, God. That's painful.
On Saturday. So... That makes you feel good, though, because they had that many, and that's options, and that's chances to score, and now they got to do it to the Red Sox, and...
Who are dumpster fire, as we know from their 4% confidence approval rating.
Are they bad now? Whatever happened to them? Poor guys.
Oh, they're fucking awful now. They lost, like, 8 in a row, and then they didn't do anything at the deadline, and they just kept getting worse, and...
I don't pay attention to small market teams, all right? So, I mean...
On that note, that's it for our show this week. Merritt, I'll talk to you next week, and everybody else, same thing. That was a weird way to end it, but there we go.
Strange stuff. Bye.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies, like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.
Hello, I'm Neelai Patel, the editor-in-chief of The Verge and host of Decoder, a business podcast where I interview CEOs about big ideas, the problems that come from those ideas, and how they make decisions. It is also surprisingly about org charts. It comes up a lot. We're launching a new limited series that we're calling the Centennial Series, where I talk to CEOs of companies that are over 100 years old, like Xerox, Barnes & Noble, and more. There's no 100-year-old company that's without its struggles, and it's been fascinating to talk to these CEOs about which parts of these companies' history are important and which parts they can let go. A little spoiler for you, if a company is over 100 years old, there's a lot of drama to talk about. It's been a good time. You can listen to the Centennial series right in the Decoder feed. New episodes of Decoder are out on Tuesday, and the Centennial series is out on Thursdays. Check it out. We think you're really going to like it. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts.